At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
A warmer friendly hello, welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Pierce, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got a great podcast for you as we're going to be joined in segment number two by our good friend Justin Perry, doing amazing work over there at Shot Quality Bets. We're going to be talking about what he's all noticed this college basketball season, touch upon a result that, if you take a look at the Shot Quality score, it certainly did not match up with the final score, what he's all been seeing this college basketball season. If there's anything to these neutral courts as well, diving into these, and we're also going to get some picks and analysis on Thursday's games with him in the final segment. Going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday and this Thanksgiving Thursday, as we hit some bank shots. Would be remiss if I did not mention to all of you guys a happy and healthy Thanksgiving to you all. Hopefully it's filled with food in your belly and money in your pockets. So we are going to do our best to be able to make you guys some money on this Thanksgiving, but hopefully you are enjoying it with friends, loved ones, and a very delicious meal. And if you ever have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at @unit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, name does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Anyone that was hoping for food power rankings and or like some sort of a food thing or anything like that, we're going to stick to the main source of nourishment for our bankrolls in money. So I will cut time from that and instead just dive into what we're all seeing in college basketball and give you guys picks and analysis on this podcast. So let's take a look back at Wednesday's games, try to find some trends, try to get to know these teams a little bit better along the way as well.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
We saw two Big Ten teams play games that ended 43-42. Wisconsin won theirs against Dayton, as this was just grody. Wisconsin goes 14 of 59 from the floor. They did a solid job of taking care of the ball, and you had 13 points from Connor Asigian off the bench. A freshman from the great state of Indiana was able to come through, and for Dayton, 16 points out of Kobe Elvis. He was certainly in the building, and nobody else was able to enter the building, or for that matter, enter the hole, as Dayton, 4 of 27 from three-point range. Dayton wins the rebound battle by a count of 45-39, but 17 turnovers turned out to be very, very costly. And then Northwestern loses their low-scoring slobber knocker against Auburn by a count of 43-42. Auburn was actually up in this game, I believe, by 11. And then from there, the cooler hit. Wendell Green was relatively solid. He had only 2 points, but he was able to give out 10 rebounds. And for Auburn, they won the battle on the glass 44-36. Where they went wrong was the turnovers. They lost that battle 14-8. And Northwestern scored 42 points while turning the ball over 8 times. They went 2 of 24 from 3-point range. Auburn, a pedestrian, 5 of 21 from distance. And for Auburn, you did have Jalen Williams go 3 of 6 from 3. That means that the rest of the team went a hearty 2 of 15. So this was really not a good game out there in Cancun. And you saw quite a few of those happen on Wednesday. Maui, it was home to a lot of overs, as the Ohio State University, they out there in the Big Ten, they were able to take care of business against Texas Tech. 80-73, the final for Ohio State. You had an 8 of 23 point shooting performance from the team as Justice Suing. 33 points, 8 rebounds. You did have 3 threes made by Bruce Thornton, star freshman for this team. And then for Texas Tech, Solid day out of Daniel Bacho, 21 points, 6 boards. Kevin O'Banner was able to pump in their 19 as well, but for Texas Tech, they were not able to force a lot of Ohio State turnovers, as Ohio State was able to play even up 10-10, and really, neither of these teams missed any shots whatsoever. Indiana was actually playing without Trace Jackson Davis, so we'll just keep it to the Big Ten for now, but still got it done, 87-68. You were able to get a cover with Little Rock, but Ray Thompson, good game in this one, 20 points, a rebound set for Little Rock. DJ turned it up Smith, 20 points in this one. Taking a little bit more of a look at Maui, you had Arizona win the Maui Invitational title, 81-79 the final. Arizona seemed up to a 3.5-point favorite, so they were unable to cover the closing number. Openers, they pushed on a lot of them, 2 to 2.5, depending upon where you were looking. But for Creighton, you had 11-11 out of Baylor Shireman. And for Creighton, they did a solid job with the possessions that they had. They went 10 of 25 from 3-point range, but Arizona, they just did a very solid job in general of being able to win the battle on the glass, 38-29, as Umar Balo, 30 points, 13 rebounds. He had Kirk Kadisa give out 9 assists to 1 turnover as well. So a very good day from Arizona. Hey, back-to-back unders for Arizona. USC, they go to the battle for Atlantis out there in the Bahamas. They take down BYU, 82-76. Not a lot of missed shots in this game from BYU from deep, 12 of 32 from 3. But for BYU, 17 turnovers to USC's 14 really doomed them. Joshua Morgan down low for USC, double-double, 11 points, 10 rebounds, and Boogie Ellis. He was boogieing on into the hole as he had 27 points, and Drew Peterson, great name, 16 points, 10 boards, 6 assists. USC, 18 of 30 at the free throw line. They have not been a good free throw shooting team the last few seasons at BYU. 14 of 22. So do take note of that on both sides. Or a little bit earlier on in the day, something that really stood out to me was Rhode Island being able to get a 57-44 win because Illinois State has really not been able to generate a whole heck of a lot of offense. 14 points, 7 rebounds, 4 steals out of Kendall Lewis, and that was about it. As for Rhode Island, they go to 3 of 19 from 3-point range, but Ishmael Leggett was able to pump in their 18 points. And for Rhode Island, they had all but those 18 points for Leggett come off the bench. They had 4 of their 5 scorers not score a single point, but Brayon Freeman, 21 points off the bench, and you got a double-double out of Joseph Blue, who he came in and he was able to do a very solid job down low with 11 rebounds and 10 points. So, very strange game there. You did see a nice victory from Western Kentucky. They take down Tulane by kind of 71-65 for Western Kentucky. Jamarian Sharp was in a lot of foul trouble, but still was able to give the team 7 blocks down low. And for Tulane, they were playing without Jalen Cook. That was pretty big for the team as they went just 5 of 18 from 3-point range and lost that rebound battle by a count of 32-23. Something else that was lost in this game was defense. Eastern Michigan gives up 101 to Winthrop as Winthrop gets the 101-87 win. Tyson Acuff, he went off for 25 points in this one for Eastern Michigan, but how about what Winthrop was able to get off the bench in the form of 20 points and 5 rebounds from Toneri Lane, and for Winthrop overall, 12 of 22 from 3-point range, so they were rock solid on that front. Anyone that, like me, laid the points with Kansas, you're probably not too happy about that backdoor 3 at the buzzer. 80-74, Kansas gets a win, but no cover as Casey Marcel went 5 of 8 from 3-point range. I believe that he can that 3 that led to the NC State cover for Kansas. They've been able to do a solid job on defense. Got a little bit of bad luck in this game. I actually felt like they defended halfway decent. And Jalen Wilson, another double-double, 19 points, 11 rebounds. And Kevin McCullough, he had 10 points, 11 boards. Grady Dick just continues to be terrific from distance. 6 of 12 from 3-point range. Need other guys to be able to step up, but he's been able to do a solid job. And I think the question needs to be, is Georgetown thankful that buyouts exist? Because, man, this was bad. 74-70. American as a double-digit underdog wins outright on Georgetown's home floor. Johnny O'Neill, credit where credit is due for American. 16 points, 4 boards. Georgetown, they win the battle on the glass 39-30. They got 21 offensive rebounds, but just a undisciplined team. They turned the ball over 17 times in this game. Primo Spears pumped in their 15, but man, for Georgetown, that was not necessarily the world's greatest showing. This was not a good showing either from South Dakota. They lose to Sam Houston State 80-49, but I really do think we need to give a lot of credit to Sam Houston State. They aren't going to continue to shoot 11 of 19 from 3-point range like they did, as you had 4 of 4 off the bench from 3 from distance for Cameron Huffner, but you also had a 4 of 5 3-point shooting performance from Deontay Powers. And in this game, Quah Grant only 5 points. And when he gets going for Sam Houston State, they're dangerous. But I mean, Sam Houston State, they've already won at Oklahoma and at Utah. So a team that is legitimately relatively solid, in my opinion. The Loyal Marymount Lions very nearly had an upset. Morgan State forced them to overtime. The Mount pulls it off by a kind of 81-80, but liked what I saw out of Isaiah Burke in this one for Morgan State. 30 points, Malik Miller does what he always does, stuff the stat sheet. 14 points, 4 assists, 10 rebounds, but for Loyal Marymount, they got a very massive performance out of Cameron Shelton. 26 points, 5 rebounds, and Kelly Leu Pepe, 29 points, 11 rebounds, to be able to bail them out. Baylor had a little bit of trouble in the first half against McNeese State before they outscored them by 20 in the second half. McNeese State, as a matter of fact, had this at a one-possession game. 32 to, I believe it was 30, with about 3.5 minutes left in the first half before pulling away to be able to get an 89-60 win. And for Baylor, three-point shooting was on point. Keontae George, 4 of 11 from three-point range, 17 points. Very balanced effort for McNeese State, a team that's looking to rise up in the Southland Conference. You did have Zach Scott be able to pour in their 12 points as well. I've unfortunately been cold with the DK Nation picks. Hopefully we can get that picked up today. My apologies on that, but I don't think anyone saw this coming. Denver, 86 of 64 over IUPUI. IUPUI had not gotten to 60 points all season long. That includes a game against D3 Franklin, and for IUPUI in Denver, they came out and they went 12 of 14 from the floor to start the day. In Denver, they go 25 of 31 at the free throw line, 28 of 44 overall from the floor, as Tyree Corbett put in there a double-double off the bench, 12 points, 10 rebounds. Tuco Tainemo was able to insert 13 points and 10 rebounds into there as well. And for IUPUI, Chris Olsen had a double-double with 14 points, 10 rebounds. These two teams are two of the worst in terms of three-point shooting percentage in all of college basketball. They really didn't do a great job in this game. 8 of 27 overall, but that was quite shocking in my opinion. We will look to do better today. Mississippi Valley State, speaking of doing better, all of a sudden they've been able to cover a few numbers. That's now 4 straight covers for them. They lose the Air Force by a count of 64 to 51, but showing a little bit of fight. You've been able to get some very good production out of Terry Collins for 11 points, 5 rebounds in this game, and you had 12 points, 12 rebounds out of Alvin Stridick. So he was able to do a nice job, and for Air Force, really not a great team. He did have 22 points out of Camden Vanderzweig, but certainly not a team that I put in too high of regard as of right now. Abilene Christian falling out some tough times. They're now 2-4. They lose to UC Riverside, 76-65 for Riverside. 7 of 12 is what Flynn Cameron shot from three-point range, really lift the team to victory as he had 26 points, 8 rebounds. Ian Pullen was able to pull in there, 25 points as well. And for this Abilene Christian team, they did force Riverside into 17 turnovers, but they also lost the rebound battle by a count of 40-30. Central Florida all over Evansville by a count of 76-56. And this is a Central Florida team that has a lot of fight in. I've been noticing that Evansville has been able to provide a really good half in a lot of games, and then they've been sort of fading away late. They were down 1 point with about 18 minutes left in this one before they went into the abyss. For Central Florida, a 10 of 20 three-point shooting performance got done for them. Ithiel Horton was able to go off for 16 points, goes 4 of 6 from three-point range for Evansville. They lose the battle on the glass by a count of 42-33, so Central Florida was able to look good. Merrimack, the Merrymen, were able to get a cover over Providence, 71-57, as you've still got out of the fold for this team. Jordan Miner is very major, but for Merrimack, they go 10 of 23 from three-point range. Meanwhile, for Providence, they did have a very, very nice double-double out of Devin Carter, 12 points, 10 rebounds. Bryce Hopkins, he chipped in their 13 points as well. But for Merrimack, credit where credit is due. They were able to force Providence into 14 turnovers, so they were able to linger in that game. Good old Dunk City, they were able to win the Florida Gulf Coast Shortcase as they win by a count of 73-59, so good on them. This is a Florida Gulf Coast team that I actually really do like, as they went just shy of 31 from three-point range. UMKC has been playing some interesting defense, but for UMKC, not a great offensive team. They go 8 of 25 from three-point range, and they shoot 34% from the floor. And right now, one of the biggest fades in all of college basketball is Louisville. They lose to Cincinnati by a count of 81-62. By the way, if you had the under in this game, a little bit brutal there, 82 points in the second half. But for Cincinnati, they go 12 of 32 from three-point range, 26 points out of David DeJulius. Landry Sully, he contributes 21, and for Louisville, I mean, their lack of a backcourt is just killing them right now. 15 turnovers in this game. They had that run against Texas Tech where they had 2 points in like 13 minutes. Boy, not terrific on that front. Lindenwood try to blow this one, but as a moneyline underdog, they get the job done against Idaho State 77-76 as Lindenwood 6-14 from three-point range, and I was fearing that I was going to lose this one after they were up by double figures, but Chris Childs, 23 points, 10 rebounds. Childs certainly played like a man, and this was one where Lindenwood was up 47-30 before things very, very nearly went awry, but the good news for those that backed Lindenwood is that they did not. Mississippi State had a tough time with Utah, but they were able to finally put them away, 52-49 the final. For Mississippi State, they're very willing to shoot threes, and they did a great job on the glass as they were able to get 19 offensive rebounds to Utah's 13, as Utah won the overall rebound battle 49-45, but that's just because Mississippi State got so many shots online as Utah lost a turnover battle 14-6. But for Mississippi State, the big key, Tolu Smith, 16 points and 16 rebounds to be able to lift the team to victory out in the great state of California. We saw Washington get it done against Fresno State, 62-57. Looks like it's going to be a long year for Fresno State. Good news for them, Isaiah Moore, he gave you more. 15 points, 13 rebounds, but for Washington, they've really cranked down their tempo. They go 5 of 23 from three-point range, but the man that was able to start in this game, Keon Brooks, 16 points, 5 boards, trio of blocks, and for Fresno State, 21 turnovers as Jamiro Baker, man, it's been a little bit rough for him. This was very rough for Pepperdine as he had a lot of mid-majors from the West Coast schools. Not necessarily have the world's greatest day on Wednesday. Pepperdine loses to UCLA 100-53 as UCLA goes 10 of 20 from three-point range. Every starter had at least 11 points, and off the bench, David Singleton had 13, and for Pepperdine, no good, very bad, terrible night as they had 17 turnovers to UCLA's 9. UCLA won the rebound battle by a count of 44-26. Houston Mallett was able to give you 13 points, and that's about all that you're able to say positive about Pepperdine. UNLV, they've got a lot of positives. They're 5-0, and they look like a legitimate team that could be able to make the NCAA tournament. 71-62, they take down Minnesota. Jameson Battle, back in the fold for Minnesota, took 17 shots and got 17 points off of them as he and Dawson Garcia combined 32 points, 17 rebounds. But for UNLV, whole is greater than the sum of its parts with this team. They won their turnover battle 9-17, 17 for Minnesota, 9 for UNLV. And for UNLV, how about what you've been able to get out of Keyshawn Gilbert? 17 points, 5 boards, but a stabilizer for a UNLV team that they play slowly. They don't have a ton of offense, but that was very solid. And Arkansas in overtime, they get it done against San Diego State, 78-74. This isn't over for San Diego State. They played this game to the under. They were playing much better defense, but for San Diego State, and we're going to be talking about them on the flip side with our good friend Justin Perry. 2 of 18 from three-point range after I believe they went 3 of 19 against Arizona. So they're 5 of their last 37. I think that that'll peak up as you do have Matt Bradley in this game go off for 23 points. But for Arkansas, they went and they got to the free throw line. 27 of 38 at the charity stripe for San Diego State. I don't know if this new style is necessarily doing them a lot of good with playing so up-tempo as they had Ricky Council. Arkansas did go off for 19 points. And for San Diego State, still a very stout team, but I almost think that the old style where they played super duper slow and the old teams of 50 actually worked out better for them. This did not work out if you bet on Michigan. They were able to get the win, but no cover. 78-68 the final. Hunter Dickinson, 9 points, 12 rebounds in this game. And for Michigan, they do go 12-30 from three-point range, but they allowed Jackson State to be able to linger. As for Jackson State, you had Cabe Watson take 20 shots. He got 19 points, and for Jackson State, they won the battle on the glass 44-38. That is not good if you're Michigan State. You did have a double-double in this game for Jackson State from Trace Young, and you got old Mo Williams, who used to play in the NBA. He's been able to do a solid job of coaching them up. Doing a good job of coaching them up is Rick Barnes right now. 71-45, Tennessee dismantles Butler, really pulling away in the second half. This was very close in the first half, and by the way, Josiah Jordan-James did not play in this game. That was not known until like minutes before tip, and Santiago Vescovi, he picked up the slack. 13 points as for Butler, they lose a rebound battle by kind of 37-29, and for Butler, 23 turnovers on 15 made buckets. That is not good. What is very good? Kansas State. They are still undefeated. They are now 6-0. They take down Louisville 61-59 as for Kansas State, Keontae Johnson continues to be seller with 16 points and 4 boards, but let's talk about Marquise Owell. He did have 5 turnovers in this game, and his steals were a little bit down, but 18 points, 4 rebounds entering into that game, was averaging 15 points, 8.5 assists, and a little bit over 2 steals per contest. And for LSU, 17 turnovers in this game, KJ Williams, 17 points, 10 rebounds, but Kansas State looking like a bona fide, very, very good team. Missouri, they looked relatively solid against Coastal Carolina as well. 89-51, the final for Missouri. 12-33 from three-point range. They had DeMoy Hodge really do a good job of stuffing the stat sheet on this one. 18 points, 5 boards, 7 assists, 5 steals. And for Coastal Carolina, lots of transfers in the fold. They shot 24.5% from the field, and Jamari Brown was able to chip in their 12 points, but that's really all that they had to speak of. Florida International, by the way, 83-50 over Stony Brook. This is a Stony Brook team that is looking quite sad. You had Miami win but no cover against St. Francis of Brooklyn, 79-56 as for Miami. Much as 5-15 from three-point range, but you had another double-double from Nochad Omir, and good for them. Nigel Pack was able to get online, 23 points. Liberty, they got online. They took down Bradley by a count 55-44 as for Liberty. You had Darius McGee go for 21 points in this one, and Kyle Rode, a little bit of a point forward, 10 boards, 5 points, 4 assists, and Bradley, they've been playing with a thin bench because they're really limited in terms of their lineup right now due to injury. Malavi Leon, 17 points, 10 rebounds, and the rest of the team just put up a turd. So, not too terrific. Also, give a little bit of love to Charleston. They take down Kent State, 74-72, a really good Charleston team and a really good Kent State team. Kent State, 9-20 from three-point range, but Charleston just comes at you in waves. As Charleston, they did a good job grabbing 11 offensive rebounds as Ryan Larson, 16 points, 5 assists. He did have some turnovers, but was able to do just enough to be able to get his team to that victory. And Lipscomb, they take down Chattanooga, 72-66. It's been a little bit of a down year thus far for their versatile player in Hassan Asadullah, only 9 points, 5 rebounds. But for Lipscomb, you had 21 big points off the bench from Jacob Onyesevic. And for Chattanooga, 8 of 28 from 3-point range. Jake Stevens has been solid for this team, but they really do need some of the other parts to be able to pick it up as well. Also, Southern Miss, 6-0 now. They were able to take down Fort Wayne in a neutral court game, 70-58. They now have taken down Winthrop by 25 points, one on the road against Liberty, and one on the road by double figures against Vanderbilt. That is a team that is starting to surprise right now, and you might be a little bit surprised as to some of the results that we have been seeing in college basketball thus far. And as you can tell from what we all got in terms of the neutral court games on Wednesday, lots of unders recently. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the last 7 days, few games pending for Wednesday as I record this because we've got a lot of late game action. 207 unders to 179 overs over the last 7 days. That is 53.6% to the under and underdogs in the Science Fan. And nearly 52% going 200, 185, and 6 against the spread. And home underdogs especially, 62, 46, and 3 against the spread in the last 7 days. Overall for the season, home underdogs hitting at 57%, 105, 79, and 3. And in terms of overall unders, hitting at 51.6%, 426 unders to 399 overs. So that's what we're seeing in basketball right now. And that's what we got from a College Basketball Wednesday. Now let's be thankful for the gift of Shock Quality Bets. Justin Perry does an amazing job over there. And taking a look at the great game of college basketball coming up next, we'll get his thoughts on what he's all been seeing, how he's using Shock Quality, and what he's been noticing in terms of variant slash lack of there this college basketball season. That comes up next right here on Coast Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Pierce, and now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
With myself, Greg Spears, and now part of the Beast Family Podcast. It is great to be joined by our guest as Justin Perry does great work over there at Shot Quality Bets. He does a nice job taking a look at the great game of basketball, and Shot Quality does a great job taking a look at basketball from an analytics perspective. Shot Quality does a terrific job of just taking a look at the game of basketball. Justin does so much on that front end. You're able to follow him on Twitter at Justin Perry and the number 8 altogether. Last name is spelled Perri. And Justin, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Greg, always a pleasure to join the podcast, talk a little college hoops. It's been a really great week. I mean, Feast Week, there's really not much better. All these tournaments going on, games starting nice and early. It has been a basketball bettor's dream. And yeah, you know, Shot Quality has been having a nice little run. Our model has quite literally been nailing some of the recommended plays and some of the bigger points of value indicators. But, you know, it's been a fun time for us. But honestly, we're just excited to get some of these analytics, this next generation analytics out there, start talking about what we're doing, how we're trying to break down the game a little more, and maybe give a different view into how these games go to give a clearer perspective on what's actually happening.
Yeah, but I know that one of the things that you guys pointed out as well, because you guys do a great job taking a look at both the final score, what you expected, that San Diego State versus Arizona game did not have the outcome that a lot of people were thinking, because I know they're over there at Shot Quality. Not only did you guys think that San Diego State should have been able to win that game, but rather convincingly, and I think that that's a game that shows really the variance that you get in college basketball.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, San Diego State shot 3 of 19 from behind the arc, right? So you have to think immediately that in a recreation of the game, if those shots were taken again, that's essentially how Shot Quality looks at it, right? We go back and we look at how the shots are taken, and we assign an expected value based on, you know, what we project that shot to be worth over the course of many attempts, not just the one in which it happens. So 3 of 19 shooting from a team like San Diego State, you would expect them probably to, you know, at least get 9-10 more points out of their 3-point shots. So that would probably help them a bit. And then also Arizona shooting 45%, 58% from the field, 34 from 58. It's just a high percent, right? And most times that you play these games, you'd think that most of these numbers would be a little bit more towards a normal, given the turnovers. We had more turnovers for Arizona by 6. It was a little bit of a surprise to some. I mean, the assists tell a very different story. Of course, the passing for Arizona was very sharp. They got a lot of nice looks as well, but it was an interesting result to see with Shot Quality, and something that maybe helps you see some value on San Diego State rather than just taking a huge loss at face value. And it's not to say that they win every single time they play Arizona normally, but just that there was probably a better than zero chance that they should have had a closer result, a tighter game, and that things could have very easily gone the other way based on the quality of the shots.
Absolutely. I thought that that one really stood out to me. And just in terms of college basketball this season, have we been noticing more or fewer games that have sort of had a lot of variants like this, where sort of like the wrong team in comparison to your model were able to get the job done, a team just completely shot the lights out when maybe they probably should not have? Because where I really noticed it was in the 2022 NCAA tournament. I actually feel like this regular season thus far hasn't had too many results like that Arizona versus San Diego State game, but I felt like that 2022 tournament had just a whole bunch of those.
Yeah, and I think it's actually been pretty normal, maybe a little bit higher than expected. We are actually, you know, something we do with shot quality is grade every single one of these games. So we use like a color coding sequence to sort of show when we have what we call an unexpected result, when the game sort of turns out different than the shot quality result might project. And it's been pretty crazy on like specific days, like high volume days. The tournaments can be a little bit different than expected. I know like Sunday was one of the bigger like unexpectancy days. Like the first Saturday of the season was a really high unexpectancy day. Like we had, I think, 17 of 39 games one day go the other way. So there have been some days where for sure it can be frustrating. And I think anybody who's been betting college basketball right now probably has a few wins under their belt they know they shouldn't, and a bunch of losses they feel like really had a better shot or maybe even should have cashed based on how they played. And look, that's college basketball. These are younger, less, you know, refined players than what we see in the pros. And there are huge runs. There's guys who go cold. There's, you know, players who miss the wide open three a lot more than maybe if you watch the NBA. It happens here more, and it makes us more prone to some of these results.
No question about it. You are going to get some variance in college basketball. Those are the pains of it, and a lot of times that's also the fun of it as well. So we've got Justin Perry of Shot Quality Bets joining me on the podcast. And Justin, we saw a lot of variance on Wednesday as well, because we saw that Wisconsin versus Dayton game, and I'm not sure what you expected the final to be in terms of shot quality bets, but I'm going to assume it was a little bit higher than 43 to 42. That was really, really bad, as the two teams combined to shoot 10 of 54 from three-point range. And when you see something like this, because Wisconsin's now going to be taking on Kansas, Dayton is going to be taking on NC State, do you sort of have that in the back of your mind being like, these two teams were colder than an igloo the previous game, they're due for a little bit of positive progression, or do you start over fresh? Because I always think that for me, it's important to try to start over fresh, but also in your mind as well, you go back to what you saw last between Wisconsin and Dayton, and that was an almighty brick fest.
It was not pretty. I mean, under 90 points for a contest is just never great. I think you do need to wipe clean a little bit to the best of your ability. It's not easy, though, right? It's tough because we expect so much to detach from what we just saw. And I think that's part of the challenge of handicapping this sport, is knowing when to take something seriously like that, or maybe having the experience to say, oh, in that spot, it was just how that game was going. It's definitely not easy to figure out, but look, I think Wisconsin has had a lot of these slower paced games. They had a 60 to 50 result with Stanford. They had a 56 to 45 result with Green Bay. They played South Dakota and, you know, they did well. They scored 85, but they held their opponent under 60. So it has been a lot of low scoring totals against them. I think maybe Dayton just had a better job defending them than what they had seen. You listen to a few of those names before they met Dayton. They weren't exactly the most impressive. So it might have just been getting up to speed with a little bit more of a legitimate defense. But Dayton doesn't exactly have the highest totals this season either. I mean, they had a little bit of a run and gun game against SMU. That game went only over the line by 3 points, though. Most of their games are coming in again around that 110 mark before they met Wisconsin, 60 to 51 against Robert Morris, 52 to 60 against UNLV. Both games going under by 18, 23 points. It has definitely been a little bit of Dayton style right now. So I don't know. I think both teams are happy to like slow it down, try to get the right look, and they just They couldn't find the back of the net. They just literally, it was not pretty. But I would probably take it a little seriously at this point. It's not just a one-off. The shot quality score is not up for that game just yet, or I would let you know how we're seeing it. But we were not expecting that, I'll tell you that much. We were expecting a little bit closer to like a, you know, 124, 125 point affair. This was maybe a bit of an outlier, but still something to definitely keep an eye on.
Yeah, no question. Not a game that we were expecting 100 points or anything like that. Little bit higher than neither team being able to get to 45 as well. That was ugly. And I do think that it's going to be interesting to look at both of those games as well, because those two games for the Battle for Atlantis are set right now as we do this, as Justin Perry is joining me on the podcast. And I do think that the Wisconsin versus Kansas game is very interesting. With Kansas, I've got them as about a mid-sized favorite. I like what I've seen from their defense really this season, because we're talking about the Wisconsin defense, but I don't think we can sleep on the fact that Kansas is a little bit of a new-look team. And I'm not sure if you've been identifying this, but it feels like teams are playing a little bit faster this year. But honestly, the offenses aren't really much more efficient, because a lot of these blue-blood schools, like a Kansas, like a Duke, they're playing with tempo, but at the same time, they're doing a really good job of locking teams down, and they themselves having a little bit of a tough time of being able to knock down their outside shots.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see if this one gets slowed down. I would tend to think it doesn't. I would tend to think Kansas still has a pretty good shot to come in here and put up 75 points against this Wisconsin team. I don't know if there is a line yet. I can quickly check, but
there is not.
It's going to probably be a pretty interesting one to watch come out. I mean, if you can get a decent position where maybe it's like 6.5 or 5.5, I don't know. I have to see what some of the more, I guess, KenPom-esque predictions are for this line to maybe understand what we're expecting. Yeah, it's looking like it's probably going to open up around 5-6 points, maybe 4.5 if we're lucky. I'd probably hit Kansas if I could get 4.5. That's for sure. I'd probably start to think it's pretty fair around 6-6.5. I wouldn't play 6.5. I wouldn't play 7. I think it probably should be around 8 or 9. I could see Kansas running away with it. I don't know. Again, we could see it open up a little bit inflated because of how slow Wisconsin looked. And if that's the case, you know, if it feels too big, I'd probably just lay off. Because you don't know. It could be just really tough for this Wisconsin team. They might just be having too much fun in the sun. You know, they are in the Bahamas. You don't know how they're going to play, if they're going to have that, like, seriousness about it. Kansas could just come in and, you know, show them what's up and school them a bit. But, yeah, I got to take a little bit of a deeper dive. But if it does open, like, -4.5, I'm probably looking at Kansas.
Yeah, but I set Kansas as a 6.5-point favorite myself. So pretty much 6 would be the max that I'd be willing to lay myself. So I think that we're sort of on the same line with that one. And then, Justin, just taking a look at the rest of the college basketball board that we've got for this Thanksgiving Thursday. We've got the PK85 that is going to be opening up. That is going to be absolutely tremendous. We've got basketball in London, which I find to be very, very strange. It's Thanksgiving, and we're sending these poor teams from like the Northeast Conference, from the Metro Atlantic, the Ivy League, to across the pond, which that just to me sounds very, very strange. I'm not sure how they came up with that. But with that said, is there anything that you're going to be taking a look at for this college basketball Thursday?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that a team that has caught my eye to start the season is Princeton. Honestly, I've been a fan of what they've been able to do. I do think that they actually might be getting a little bit too much respect. I know that the line's opening up around 9.5, 10, and I like this Princeton team. I do. I think that they're probably getting a little bit too much love. I think Army might be able to keep this game within the double-digit mark. The Army hasn't exactly been, you know, terrible per se. They've had a couple losses, you know, last two games against Radford and William & Mary, but, you know, shot quality had that Radford game, which is a bit of a, you know, 15-point blowout, a little closer, around 6. So they've been performing a little worse than expected. I could see this team that gave, you know, Siena a good run, gave a pretty, you know, respectable Stonehill College team that's been covering a lot of spreads, and they gave them a good run too, even though it was a loss on paper. I think Army might be able to get it done in London. I think that when you have these travel scenarios, and these aren't like, again, these aren't professional athletes, college athletes going to a new time zone, new preparation, they're even, you know, compared to the travel that these kids do for college, this is a lot. So I think taking the points in those scenarios is the right way to go. And seeing Army maybe get about 2-3 points too many, I'm with that one. That's something I'm definitely going to be looking at in England. And then, you know, I mean, I think that we have a great one in Alabama and Michigan State. I'm really excited about that game. I know that, like, a lot of people are expecting that one to be very close, probably leaning Alabama. You know, that's a little tougher. That's what I'm looking forward to watching the most, probably. If I had to, like, take a side on it, I think it is probably going to be Michigan State and the points. I think that they have had actually pretty good look out of Tom Izzo for the start of the season. They're going to play pretty tough. I think they could maybe even take this one home. I know shot quality has that. So if you're looking for a shot quality pick, we do project Michigan State to win the game by about 1.5 points. Pretty good value there if you're an MSU fan. Shot quality is behind you in the Alabama Thanksgiving game. So I'll probably be playing that one myself. I think it's a good look. But yeah, it should be a great day of games. Really excited to sit down with some family, take a little bit of a breather. I know that might not exist for you, Greg, but you know, maybe a little bit of a breather, hopefully. It should be a good Thanksgiving.
We are going to be going 500 miles per hour, my friend, on this college basketball board. There's going to be a lot of football. There's going to be a lot of fun to be had. And Justin, something that I am very thankful for on this podcast is you and all the great work that you do over there at Shot Quality Bets. I know that you guys have been doing an amazing job thus far this season. Love the good people at home. Know they're able to follow you on social media, just everything they've got going on in general.
For sure, yeah. So my Twitter is JustinPerry8. You can follow me there. I post a lot of my plays. You know, everything's just as available as can be. ShotQualityBets.com is, you know, where I now sort of conduct all of my research. I've helped design out tools that are essentially engineered for analytically geared gamblers who want to come in and see this type of data, this type of expectancy data, rather than maybe just relying on box scores and, you know, seeing how a player shot versus did they get good looks. And we're trying to bring that to the table in college basketball analytics, and we're going to do it. So, you know, it's either really learning about shot quality now or you're going to hear about it later. So definitely try to get ahead of the wave. I'm always open to talk about it. I love college basketball. I love coming on this podcast, getting to chop it up. Literally anyone who wants to talk a little bit about the game is always welcome in my inbox. So always want to connect about shot quality and what we do. So I'm always really appreciative, thankful, love coming on the podcast. Can't wait to return.
Justin always does an amazing job when he joins this podcast. His work over at Shot Quality Bets is absolutely amazing, and always appreciate him coming aboard. A big thanks to Justin for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the Visa Family Podcast. Coming up next, it is that time podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the Thanksgiving Thursday board for college basketball as we hit some bank shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Spears, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always a pleasure to be joined by our good friend Justin Perry over at Shot Quality Bets. Being able to take a look at the analytics of college basketball the way that he does, I think is very beneficial. It's revolutionary. Those guys are absolutely amazing at all they do, and Justin plays a big hand in that, and every time he joins this podcast, lends great insights. Big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on this Turkey Day Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at GNet_81. We're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. It pretty much goes with the random Denver versus Citadel game, and then pretty much by start time in terms of these multi-team events. So, you know, Battle for Atlantis first, and then the ESPN Events Invitational, the Pat Knight Classic, you've got the Wooden Legacy, and then you've got one random game between good old Ewe Pewee and New Orleans. So that is how we're going to be going about things, and we do begin with that first game of 781-782 on the board. It is Denver. They are going to be playing against the Citadel. This is from Lakefront Arena in Louisiana, and Denver between a 1.5 and a 2-point favorite. Totals anywhere between 143 and 144. I set my total 142. Denver came out and shot the lights out against IUPUI, but IUPUI, one of the worst defenses in all of college basketball. I don't necessarily put a whole heck of a lot of stock into that with Denver. They have done a solid job of being able to bring in some talent. I did make them, as a result, a 4.5-point favorite just because with the Citadel, it's a team in a lot of transition right now. They bring in Ed Conroy, who actually used to coach for the team about like 12 or so years ago. So he should be able to do a solid job of being able to get things online. And for the Citadel, you'd have a guy in Austin Ashe. Ashe has been able to really pour it in there, about 17 points per contest. Not a bad three-point shooter, began his career at Iowa. But the big question that I've got is, where in the heck is David Maynard? He's been averaging only about 4.5 points per contest after last season. Shot 39% from three in the final 12 games of the season. He was a double-figure scorer. He was able to get good production out of Stephen Clark. He's been able to give the team about 7.5 rebounds per game, chipping in their 15 points per contest, but with the Citadel, not necessarily ideal size. Shooting in the mid-30s from three-point range, they have really cranked down their tempo quite a bit, and Denver entering into the game against IUPUI, about 280th in terms of possessions per game. They're not looking to turn up. Tevin Smith has done a great job being able to pump in there for Denver, about 15 points per contest, about a 30% three-point shooter in Denver. Legitimately a bottom 75 team in terms of three-point shooting percentage. Prior to the game yesterday, they were shooting about 24.5% from three, and they are now shooting probably about 26-27% from distance once that's calculated in. Lucas Sinkunas, who comes in from Stanford, has been able to do a nice job, giving the team 11 points, just under 4 rebounds per game, 6'10 combo player that's able to spread the floor a little bit. And I do think that Denver going to be able to utilize that size against a Citadel team that I will say they're playing a little bit better on defense, but still leaves a little bit of something to be desired, but certainly playing more slowly. And Denver has been able to play a little bit of better defense yesterday, notwithstanding. Set my total at 142. I'm going to be diving under and willing to lay up to 4.5 with Denver. These next four games have no numbers up on them just because this is the battle for Atlantis. All these teams played yesterday. You can expect some openers in the AM. 783, 784. It is Wisconsin against Kansas. Kansas, I set as a 6.5-point favorite. I made my total a 131, so 130.5 or less. Looking at the over, 131.5 or higher to the under with Kansas. they've been able to do a much better job on defense this season as well. I think that that's where they're going to be hanging their hat, because with Kansas, you've got one very prolific scorer in Grady Dick. 6-12 from three-point range yesterday, and overall for the 6'8 guard, he's been terrific. He's been able to average 18 points per game. It's giving you about 3.5 rebounds per game. You'd like to see a little bit more rebounding from someone that's 6'8", but man, this guy is able to let it fly. But you've got Jalen Wilson averaging a double-double down low. He's able to hit a few threes as well, been able to do a great job of also facilitating, giving out nearly 4 assists per contest. It's been a lot of guys just knowing their role. Kevin McCullough, he does a great job on the defensive side of things. Now, if you do have a fear with Kansas, they might be worn down a little bit. Bobby Pettiford, who came in off the bench, was the only guy that wasn't a starter that had more than 9 minutes in yesterday's game. You've been able to get good production out of DeJuan Harris. He's been able to dole out about 6 assists per contest. Not necessarily much of a score. And for Wisconsin, they make just things in general as bad as talking about politics at the Thanksgiving table when it comes to their defense. And they go really, really slow. As for Wisconsin, you've got Tyler Wall, who's really taking over for this team. 14 points, 8 boards, and with Chucky Eppern. Kind of love the way that he's been able to develop. Only 2 points yesterday. I do think that he's going to be able to do a little bit better in this spot. Not a great three-point shooter by any stretch of the imagination, but he's able to give this team nearly 2 steals per contest. And we were talking about with Justin. This is a Wisconsin team that they do play quite slowly. They're doing a nice job of holding it under the ball. Only about 11 turnovers per game in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis. Last season, they were rock solid. And going into yesterday's game, they were shooting 38.5% from three. Yesterday was an outlier of bad shooting. Is this Wisconsin team going to shoot 38.5% from three like they were going into yesterday? No. Are they going to shoot 6 of 27 from three every night? No. It's somewhere in the middle. And the big key for them, Jordan Davis, the brother of the other Davis, who was on campus last season, he's been able to give the team 9 points. Max Gleesman, he's able to do a solid job as a Wofford transfer as well. But with that said, did set Kansas as a 6.5-point favorite. 6 or less, willing to lay the points. 7 or more, willing to take them with Wisconsin. It set my total at 131, so 130.5 or less, looking over 131.5 or higher to the under. 785, 786 on the betting board. USC and Tennessee. The Lane Kiffin Bowl, ironically enough, has no numbers up on this game, but with Tennessee, I set them as an 8-point favorite. Total on this game of 130.5. This is with Josiah Jordan James most likely missing, as he did yesterday, but I do like what I'm seeing out of Tennessee on defense. Offense, leaving a little bit of something to be desired. They've been settling for a couple too many threes, and Josiah Jordan James is very solid. 13 points, 6 boards, but with Tennessee having Olivier Kamwa doing all that he's doing as a 6'9", little bit of combo player, he's able to give you 9 points, 4 boards. He's able to pop some threes. That is able to give the team some nice stretchability. Santiago Viscovi does need to cut down on the nearly 3 turnovers per contest, but he does a nice job doling out the ball. He and Zakai Ziegler have been able to combine for about 7 assists per game. And for USC, they've got a big-time free-throw shooting issue, as they're shooting as a collective below 70% at the free-throw line once again. Now, Boogie Ellis and Drew Peterson, great name. These two guys entered into yesterday averaging 16 points per contest, and with Peterson, he's able to do a good job with 8 rebounds. He's able to give out as well. Right now, about 7.5 assists per game. I think that that's going to be going downward a little bit, but need guys to be able to take the pressure off of him just a little bit. You're bringing in Trey White. He's been able to give the team 7.5 points per contest as a 6'7", a little bit of a combo player, but with USC, 15 turnovers. They've been able to have Joshua Morgan down low, give the team north of 3 blocks per game, but I do think that Tennessee, with the whole being greater than the sum of its parts down low, they're going to be able to do a nice job there, and we saw what they were able to do to Butler yesterday. These are some very unforgiving rims, but still, Butler went 5 of 23 from 3-point range, and I like the way that Julian Phillips is coming out for the Tennessee team as well. 11.6 boards in the game yesterday. It feels like he's getting more and more minutes, and he's becoming more and more a part of this team, and they also bring back Uros Plazvic. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly. 7.6 rebounds in really his second game action of the season after he, last season, was able to be a nice role player for the team. That helps them out down low. So, did set Tennessee as an 8-point favorite. Willing to lay 7.5 or less with them. 8.5 or more, taking the points with USC. And set by total 130.5, 130 or less, looking over 131 or higher to the under. 787, 788 on the betting board. It is Dayton and NC State doing battle, as Dayton is currently on my line a 3.5-point favorite, and the total is 133.5, so 133 or less, looking over 134 or higher to the under. With Dayton, they have scored 60 points or fewer now each out of their last 3 games. I think they'll be able to get past that against an NC State team that, I mean, let's just call it what it is. Their defense is not necessarily too terrific. They gave up 67 points to a Campbell team that plays as slow as molasses a little bit earlier in the season. For NC State, Bunch is able to shoot in the high 30s from 3-point range. I do like their main scorer, Tre'Quavion Smith. He has been amazing for this team. 19 points per contest, shooting in the mid-30s from three-point range, 15-plus points in every single game this season. He's able to give you a few assists as well. And then Jarkel Joyner, who comes in from Ole Miss, he has been solid as well. He's been able to pump in their 17 points per contest. Someone who's also able to give you 4-plus assists per game. So these are guys I like in the backcourt. In the frontcourt, they're going to get destroyed. DJ Burns just does not have a lot of conditioning. Comes in from Winthrop, where he had 15 points, 4.5 rebounds per game last season. But that was in 21 minutes of run. I mean, trust me, Winthrop would have loved to have played him for like 30 minutes, but he just can't stay out there on the court. Dusan Medosulcich, he's been able to give the team a few rebounds as well, but NC State does have their issues on the defensive side of things, especially giving up wide open threes, and I do think that Dayton is going to be able to get online. I mean, Dayton for the season, they're shooting below 27% from three-point range. These guys are better than that. Let's call it what it is. You've got Mongolian Mike. Mike Sherjamitz. Hopefully I'm saying that correctly. We're just going to call him Mongolian Mike. He had a big giant zero burger yesterday, but this guy is capable of shooting threes. 6'8", a little bit of a combo player. I like what he's able to bring to the table. You've also got Kobe Elvis. He is in the building, giving you 3 assists, 10-plus points per contest. Last season shot nearly 40% from 3. And then Mustafa Amziel, along with Deron Holmes, about 25.5 points per contest. Both of these guys are capable of popping threes. And Tubani Kamara, down low, 12 rebounds per game. Very well-rounded Dayton team. They're going to be going up against an NC State bunch that I think is going to have a really tough time just being able to put the ball in the basket themselves. I do think that for Dayton, they're going to be able to get out a little bit more. I don't think that they get to 70, but I mean, this ridiculous run where they've scored 60 points or fewer, I think that it ends here. So, semi-total, 133.5, 133 or less, looking over 134 or higher to the under end. With Dayton willing to lay up to 3 with them, set them as a 3.5-point favorite. 4 or more, I'd be taking points with NC State. 789, 790 on the betting board is Butler and BYU. No numbers up on this game from the Bahamas, but with BYU, I set them as a 3-point underdog. Butler, not a great second half against Tennessee, but overall, I do like this team. Manny Bates down low was actually the top shot blocker in terms of shots blocked on a per-minute basis while he was a freshman at NC State. He is rock solid down low for the team. And for Butler, got to believe that they're going to shoot better than the 5 of 23 that they did yesterday. As a matter of fact, we had 4 of 6 from downtown from Jaden Taylor and the rest of the team. They went 1 of 18, so I do think that you're going to get help from guys like Chuck Harris and Eric Hunter Jr. Both of these guys entered into yesterday shooting north of 40% from 3. I don't think that they're going to be able to maintain that, but Hunter is able to give you about 11.5 to 12 points per game. Chuck Harris, he overall for the season has been able to let it flow with 14 points. He's able to chip in there a few boards, a few assists per game as well. And then you've got some good versatility with Simeus Lucatius, 6'6" combo player. He's able to score double figures. He's able to give you some nice production there. This is still a Butler team that's dealing with Ali being out due to injury, but still I saw a bunch. And then on the flip side for BYU, just turnovers are costing this team. They entered into yesterday, turning the ball over nearly 20 times for contest. I do like Fusani Traore along Gideon George, a pair of guys combining to average about 23 points, 12 boards. George, who's able to do a solid job shooting in the mid-30s from three-point range, but I mean, you just need more in the backcourt. Rudy Williams, 5 turnovers per game is what he was averaging going into yesterday. Yesterday did give the team 15 points and 6 assists, but still had 4 turnovers. That is right now the worst thing that he's doing for this team. You've got good size with Ali Atiki, the 6'10 gentleman who has been able to do a nice job hauling in there right around 5 rebounds per game, a relatively solid defender. I think that this is going to be another little bit of a grind about game. BYU is playing a little bit more tempo. Butler, they're just doing a nice job of locking teams down on defense as they have allowed 68 points or fewer in all but one of their games. That game came yesterday for BYU. They are looking to push the tempo a little bit more, so I did set my total at 129, 128.5 or less, looking at the over 129.5 or higher. Going to be taking a look at this total under, and with Butler, one layup to 2.5 with them, 3.5 or more, going to be taking the points with BYU. We go to Kissimmee, Florida. 791, 792 on the betting board. It is Florida State. They're going to be playing against Siena. Siena is an underdog of 8 to 8.5 points, and your total on this game, you're getting it anywhere between a 140.5 and a 142. And with Florida State, I did set them as a favorite in the spot of 10 points. With Florida State, been a really, really bad year for them, but they still have good athletes. They still do have more, in my opinion, than Siena does. Jackson Stormo down low is able to give the Siena bunch right around 7 rebounds per game. Good for the Metro Atlantic, but just not of the caliber going up against ACC big men. And on top of that, Florida State is pretty much playing in their home state as well. And a guy in Darren Green, who began his career at Central Florida, so very nearby, has been very solid as well, giving the team 13.5 points per contest. He's been able to bury 50% of his threes. Florida State overall, not been bad from three. They're shooting 37.5% from distance. They've done a solid job getting Caleb Mills to be able to give you 13 points per game. The problem has really been the defense for Florida State. They're not generating a lot of steals. They're not playing super duper fast, but they're playing a little bit faster than normal for Siena. This is not really a running and gunning up-tempo team. They've really been relying upon a pair of guys in the backcourt and Andrew Playtech along Javion McCollum, who've been able to give you a combined about 30 points per contest. Siena as a whole shooting 41.5% from three. I see some serious regression coming in there for Siena. They have been a little bit loose with the ball themselves. They only generate 5.5 steals per game, 16 turnovers per contest, and I just don't think that the guards are of the caliber of ACC. You do have a guy like Jace Johnson who's able to give you 8.5 points per contest, and Michael Bear down low has been able to give the team 6 rebounds per game. Florida State, that's where they've really been decimated, losing someone like Jalen Gainey, who was the Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year last season. Him being out of the fold down low, Boba Miller, that has not necessarily been terrific, but they did get back Nakeem McLeod in their last game at 7'4". I think that is a big X factor for Florida State. I do think that Florida State going to be running a lot through that good big man, and I do think that some of their star freshmen, their star sophomores, I've been wanting to see a little bit more out of Matthew Cleveland, as he's been a little bit of a Buster-Rooney since coming out of high school. Him being able to put up 32 points in the last two games, that is a little bit encouraging as well. I do think that Florida State going to be able to stifle on defense, set my total at 136, diving under. Florida State made them a 10-point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to lay the points. 793, 794 on the betting board. Out there in Florida, you've got Stanford and Ole Miss doing battle. Ole Miss anywhere between a 1-point favorite to a 1-point underdog. Total is anywhere between 130.5 and 132. And with Ole Miss, I set them as a 4.5-point favorite. I just cannot trust in the Stanford team. They do not do a good job of taking care of the ball. Since the beginning of last season, they rank in the bottom 40 in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis. They have been able to get some good production out of Michael Jones. He has come in from Davidson. He's given the team 14 points per contest, shooting in the high 30s from three-point range. But you need a little bit more around him, as they've lost Jaden Dallaire this offseason. Spencer Jones, since he's come back, 11 points, 5 boards. Not too shabby there, but 15.5 turnovers per game for a team that shoots 65.5% at the free-throw line. They just don't do the little things well. Harrison Ingram has been a big giant bust. He's been able to give the team 4 assists, but he also turns the ball over 3 times per game, 7.5 points on less than 30% 3-point shooting. That is not ideal. And for Ole Miss, backcourt has not been great. Deshaun Ruffin has been out of the fold for the entirety of the season. There's a chance he might play in this game. I'm assuming that he is out with this line, though, and if he does play, he's going to be rather limited. But you've been able to have Matthew Morrell going to takeover mode. 18 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals, shooting 39% from 3. Ole Miss as a whole, they leave a little bit of something to be desired in terms of their shooting, but you have been able to get 3.3 steals per game out of Miles Burns. He has been a very solid since coming up from the non-D1 level. That has been huge for this team. You've got a lot of guys down low that are able to give you right around like 5-6 rebounds per game. Josh Umbala, Robert Allen, guys like this have been able to do a very solid job with Allen as well. He's able to give you a little bit of stretchability. He's able to give you a little bit over a steal per game as well. With Stanford, just the way that they don't take care of the ball, it is very concerning. Did semi-total at 134.5. I could see a little bit of late game fouling. And Ole Miss, they don't play super duper slow. It's not like they're necessarily a warp speed team or anything like that, but we've also seen Stanford be very, very lax on defense stands when they play against Cal Poly, ironically enough. So this is a circumstance where I set my total at 134.5. I'm going to be willing to go with the over, and I did set Ole Miss as a 4.5-point favorite, so taking them as a very, very slight favorite slash underdog. 795, 796 on the board. It is Oklahoma, and they're going to be playing against Nebraska. Nebraska is an underdog of 4.5 to 5.5 points, and your total on this game is anywhere between 130 and 131. With Nebraska, just do not really like what I'm seeing out of this team, and Oklahoma is a bunch that they've been off to a little bit of a rocky start as well. They lose that opening game against Sam Houston State, though I do think that Sam Houston State is actually a legitimately good team. But with Oklahoma, still have nice weapons for this team. Grant Shearfield, I think, is going to get down the offense a little bit more, 15.5 points, nearly 5 assists per game after last season when I was at Nevada. He had 19 points, 6.5 assists. He's been able to do a solid job from three-point range. This is an Oklahoma team that, as a whole, they've got good versatility. Got someone like Tanner Groves, who's right now giving you 10 points, 7 boards, block and a half per contest. Overall, Oklahoma only shooting about 28.5% from three-point range. But when it comes to this Nebraska team, you've got Emmanuel Bandamel. He's been able to pump in there about 9 points per game. You've had C.J. Wiltshire, coupled with Kasai Shaminga. These two guys have been able to average about 22.5 points per contest. Nebraska, they shoot 30% from three, 62% at the charity stripe. And someone who was at North Dakota State last season in Sam Griesel has had to become your best player. 13 points, 6 boards, 4.5 assists, and been able to get a little bit of something down low out of Juwan Gary. Gary began his career at Alabama, was a part-time starter for them last season, and has been able to do a nice job. 6'6" player who's been able to give you 7.5 rebounds per game, but you really leave a lot to be desired down low with this team. Blaze Keita has been able to give you a few rebounds as well, but with Nebraska, I'm just not very confident that things are going to be online for them. I did set this total relatively high. I did set it at a 136. You've got an Oklahoma team that is playing relatively slow, but you've got a Nebraska team that, among power conference teams, has been one of the least efficient defenses in all of college basketball. I do think that Nebraska is going to succumb to that once again, and you do have an Oklahoma team that is built around guys that do a solid job of being able to hit outside shots, so I'm going to be taking a look at this total over, and I'm willing to lay up to 10 with Oklahoma, so going to be taking a look at the Sooners. 797, 798 on the board. You've got Seton Hall, and they're going to be playing against Memphis. That is out there in the great state of Florida, and Memphis is a favorite of 2 to 2.5 points. Dawn's game is anywhere between 137.5 and 139, and with Memphis, I made them a favorite of 1.5 points. So here at the 2 to 2.5, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Seton Hall. Seton Hall has been able to do a very good job on defense. Offense has been leaving quite a bit of something to be desired. And for Memphis, you do have that main facilitator that I like in Kendrick Davis. Kendrick Davis has been able to do a nice job coming in and just helping out with the turnover woes that we've seen in past seasons. Memphis has always been a team that, under Penny Hardaway, they've had a tough time taking care of the ball. And now you've got a guy in Davis who's giving you 20 points, 5.5 assists to right around 3 turnovers, shooting 94%+ at the free throw line. I do like what he brings to the table, and that helps out 6'9" combo player DeAndre Williams, who last season saw a little bit of a dip in production. This year he's back to 15 points, 9 boards, 2 steals per game, able to do a very solid job playing off the ball. Now, Seton Hall, they've been dealing with a few ailments, so that is hurt them. Dre Davis missed the last game after he came in from Louisville. I do think that he's going to be good to go in this game, though, but you also have Alamir Dawes, 12 points per game. Dawes and Davis are both shooting 50% from three this season. Seton Hall as a whole is shooting 39% from distance. That is going to cool down a little bit. Jameer Harris, someone that I like from American, he's been able to give you 7.5 points per game, but I do think that Seton Hall comes in and is going to be able to maintain in this game because they do have so many guys that have some, shall we say, stretchability. Someone like a 6'10", Tyrese Samuels has been able to give you 6 rebounds per game. Kadari Richmond, who at 6'6", just a do-it-all player that's able to give you right around like 8-9 points per game. He's able to give you 5 or so rebounds. He's able to give you a few assists. I think that that is going to be big for this team. Casey Udafu down low actually led all of college basketball in blocks per game a few seasons ago. And Femi Odekala, I think that he's in a nice little bit of a buy-low spot coming over from Pittsburgh as well with Memphis. Just a little bit of a team that I can't trust in from the outside. They're shooting 29% from three. You've had Keandre Kennedy do a solid job since coming in from UTEP, 7 points, 3 boards, but really outside of Davis and Williams, you haven't been able to get a lot offensively out of this team, and I do think that it's going to be a little bit of a lower scoring defensive slog. As a result, I did set my total at 133.5. I'm diving under with Memphis. Set them as a 1.5 point favorite, so willing to take 2 or more with Seton Hall. Now we go across the pond. We go to London, England for 799, 800 on the board. This is Northeastern against Manhattan, and Manhattan is an underdog between 1.5 and 2 points, seeing straight one out there as well. Total is anywhere between 134.5 and 135.5, and with Manhattan, I set them as an underdog of 2 points. So the 1 to 1.5 that we're seeing on Northeastern, I really wouldn't be willing to lay anything more than what we've got right now, but I'm willing to lay the very small number just because this is a Manhattan team that still is in so much disarray. They can their coach just before the start of the season. They lose Jose Perez, who was supposed to be the top player in the conference this season. You lose just Omar Silveiro. The list goes on and on. Just not a good situation for Manhattan. Now, they've been able to get Elijah Buchanan going, 16 points, 7.5 boards per contest. He's looked very solid in the 3 games that he's played, but they've also only played 3 games. So that is a little bit of an issue in and of itself with Northeastern. They've been dealing with a bit of an injury down low as you've been without Chris Doty for a little little bit. He missed that game against Syracuse, so a little bit of an issue on that front. You do have Jamal Telford, though, who's doing a solid job, giving the team 16 points, 4.5 boards. Team just needs to be able to drill those threes, though. They're currently shooting 30% from three-point range. Good news is they're going up against a Manhattan team that they don't necessarily do a terrific job of being able to guard the arc. And when it comes to Northeastern as well, though they have been dealing with a little bit of an injury to Doty, you've been able to see a few guys be able to step up on the glass. Jared Turner, he's a 6'8" freshman. He's able to give you right around 4.5 boards per game, shooting 33% from three-point range. I like the game of Coleman Stuckey, who's been able to give you 9 points, 3 boards last season. He came in with 6 points. He was in a little bit more of a smaller role with that team. And for this Manhattan bunch, you've really been looking down low to Josh Roberts, someone who was a starter a few seasons ago at St. John's, been able to give you 14 points, 7.5 boards. And for Manhattan, they're shooting about 36.5% from three, but they always beat themselves with the little things. They're shooting 68% the free throw line with 19 turnovers per game. I think that this is going to be a very sloppy game. I think that both of these teams are going to be out of sorts in general, having to play in London. I did set my total as a result at a 134. You've got a Northeastern team that has, over the last few seasons, been one of the slowest in all of college basketball. So I'm going to be willing to dive under and with Northeastern. Willing to lay the 1 to 1.5 that we're seeing right now. Really not willing to lay too much more than that, but willing to lay this small number, 801, 802 on the betting board. It is Army. They're going to be playing against Princeton. Princeton is a favorite of between 10 and 10.5 points, and your total on this game is anywhere between 149 and 150.5. I think that Princeton should be a favorite. I don't know if I can make them a double-figure favorite here in London, though. This just feels like a little bit of a tough spot, and I mean, who's best equipped to being able to adapt to strange circumstances? I would probably think a team like Army, just utilizing common sense there. As with Army, you've got a guy that is giving you 17 points per contest, and Chris Mann, that I really like. He's been able to chip in their 4.5 rebounds, 15 plus points in each of the team's games thus far this season. So very good consistency. Surprisingly, Army has been a very bad team at the free throw line recently. They're shooting about 69% this season. That's actually up from past seasons, but you still have Jalen Rucker in the full. Rucker is able to just go through teams, and he's able to do a nice job of doling out the ball. 17 points, 3 assists, 4 boards on 37% three-point shooting last season. Down a little bit in terms of the three-point shooting thus far this season, but still doing a nice job of facilitating the offense. And for Princeton, you've got Tosun Avuman, who's been doing a very good job as a 6'8", little bit of a point forward, 16 points, 7 boards, 4 assists. He's not someone that's going to go out there and shoot threes, but that's why you've got Matt Alico, who shot over 45% from three-point range last season, and he is shooting over 50% this season. It is absolutely ridiculous what we have seen out of film. Ryan Langbord, he's back from a season ago. He's been able to pump in there 11.5 points per contest. So I do like that Princeton still has a few pieces from last season, but losing guys like Dan Freiberg, that is a big deal. Ethan Wright was a good cog for the team along Jalen Llewellyn. They pretty much had to lose 3 other top 4 scorers from last season. Rebuild from that. I do think that Army going to be able to do a respectable job on defense. You got a Princeton team that has been able to shoot it well from 3-point range, but a Princeton team that has never really been a truly up-tempo team. So it's a circumstance in which I'm going to be taking a look at the total under. I do think that Army going to do a good job around the perimeter. I just think that the unfamiliarity of playing in London is going to take it out of both of these teams. I'm going to be taking a look at the under. Set Princeton has more around a 6-point favorite, so going to be taking a look at the points as well. 803, 804 on the betting board. It is Portland, and they're playing against North Carolina at the Moda Center. That's where the Portland Trailblazers play, and with North Carolina, they are a 14-14.5 point favorite. Total on scheme is saying between 151 and 152, and with North Carolina, I feel like they should be more like a 15.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take them. This is pretty much in the home city of Portland, and they're going to have some fans out, but no fans are buts about it. North Carolina fans, they do a very, very good job of traveling, and I just don't know how Portland is going to be able to match up with Armando Bacot down low. Bacot had a few rough games begin the season, then he had 23 rebounds in the team's last contest, and for Portland, they do have good versatility. Someone like a Moses Wood is back from last season after he was able to drill over 40% of his threes. He's a 6'8". A little bit of a combo player that I like, and then you've got somebody I like in Tyler Robertson, then he just does a little bit of everything. 17.5 points, 5 boards, 4.5 assists, shoots in the mid-30s from 3-point range, but for North Carolina, you've got to believe that they're going to be able to kick things up from the 28.7% shooting that they've got from distance. Last season, they were an above-average 3-point shooting team, and Pete Nance, who came in from Northwestern, he's really been one of the best 3-point shooters at this point. He's been able to give the team 10.5 points per contest. They now have Puff Johnson back in the fold to be able to give them a little bit more in terms of depth. Leaky Black has been rock solid. And then you've got Caleb Love and RJ Davis, who, despite the fact that they're combining to shoot well below 25% from three-point range. They still have been able to do a good job hauling in their 33.5 points, 10 boards, 6.5 assists. And it's a North Carolina team that, if you look at the way that they have been efficient, fewer than 10 turnovers per game, it should lead to positive progression. You've got, for Portland, not necessarily a ton down low other than Wodu I was mentioning before. Mike Meadows is able to give you a little bit in the backcourt as well. And for Portland, one of the best free-throw shooting teams in all of college basketball. Credit where credit is due there. I do think that you're going to get a little bit more of an up-and-down game in this one. I set my total at 151.5. I'm seeing a lot of places at 152. Would not be surprised if this gets steamed up, and if this goes north of 152, I'm certainly going to be diving in on the under. But with North Carolina, I do feel like the beginning part of the season was a little bit rough for them. I think that they had some bad three-point shooting variance, and I think it's starting to even out. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 15 with North Carolina in this spot as a result, and I'm going to be taking a look at a 152 or higher under. It's 805, 806 on the board is going to be my DK Nation pick. This is Iowa State and Villanova at the Moda Center, as you've got Iowa State as a 2.5 to a 3-point underdog. Total on this game is between 131 and 131.5, and we're going to be writing up the total. This can't go much worse than the Denver IUPUI game, where you had IUPUI had yet to score 60 points in a game all season long. Just come out gangbusters, and watch that be the case here. But that said, I'm going to be diving in on this total under because you have an Iowa State team that is currently ranked in the bottom 10 in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game, and this is just a team that is built for defense. Iowa State has allowed 53 points or fewer in every one of their games thus far this season. Now, Villanova, coming off of being able to put in their 71 points against Michigan State, a little bit of credit where credit is due, but this is a Villanova bunch that they've been very hit or miss when it comes to three-point shooting this season. Their shooting is collective 34% from three. I remember that Delaware State game. They came out like 0 of 16 from three-point range, and then they came out gangbusters against LaSalle. So it is a streaky team, headlined by Eric Dixon right now, giving the team 20 points, 5.5 boards, 2.5 assists. They've been without Cam Whitmore to begin the season, so that has left a little bit of something to be desired for this team. Brandon Housen, who has come in as a little bit of an under-the-radar top 75 recruit, has been solid as well, but not having Justin Moore out there, that does hurt this Villanova team. And Iowa State has one of the most rough defenses in all of college basketball. They bring in Oshun Oshuni, who was able to average rebounds per contest. They say Bonaventure last year, and his teammate while he was with the Bonnies, Jaron Holmes, he's been able to do a great job in the backcourt, shooting 38.5% from three. That is way up from last season, but he's always been a good defender. Last year, 13.5 points, 5 boards, 3.5 assists. This season, more like 18 points, 4.5 boards, 3 assists per game. Iowa State always does a nice job of pickpocketing, nearly 12 steals per game, and Andrzej Kunic, he has been terrific for this team. He's been able to give the team 12 points per contest. Now, he is dealing with an injury, so you do want to be taking note of that, and that is taken into account with this, but you got someone like Gabe Kelscher. Doesn't give you anything on offense. Last few seasons has been shooting below 30% from 3, but has also been able to do a solid job being able to play good on-ball defense, giving the team a seal here and there, and if you don't have Kunic out there, it's most likely Hassan Ward, who's been able to give the team 6 rebounds per game, who's going to be seeing a few added minutes. Villanova, it's been a little bit rough for them in terms of their overall defense, but I think that they're going to pick it up against an Iowa State team that legitimately just has not shot it well from three-point range ever since C.J. Altsenberger got there. They are shooting 27% per three. Iowa State, they themselves, despite being so slow, they turn the ball over 13 times per game. I think that this is going to be a disgusting eyesore of a game, so I did set my total here at a 123. The DK Nation write-up is on the under, and with Iowa State, I think that they should be the favorite. I like the way that they're playing defense. I think that they're going to be able to do a solid job in this circumstance, so I like Iowa State on the money line, and when it comes to my DK Nation pick, I am writing up the under, 807, 808 on the betting board. It is Oregon and UConn doing battle out there at the Moda Center, and with Oregon, they are a 3.5 to a 4.5 point underdog. Total on this game, and between 140 and 142, and with Oregon, I set them as a 1.5 point underdog. With Oregon, keep in mind that this is in their home state. They are going to be the team out of all these teams in this event that they're going to get the most fanfare. And for Oregon, not necessarily a great result against Houston, but Houston, I legitimately think, has a chance to be the top team in all of college basketball when it's said and done. And with Enfali Dante, he's 6'11", and he's a little bit of a matchup nightmare. Doesn't shoot threes, but he's able to shoot that mid-range shot. He's able to give you 15 points, 2 blocks. He's really become a menace down low, and he's going to be going up against a UConn team that they now have back in the fold. Andre 3000 Jackson, who I absolutely loved him last season, has been used in small doses thus far this season, but last season, 6.8 points, 6.8 boards, was able to shoot 36% from three-point range. Nice little combo player to have. Adama Sanogo is the man that makes this team a go-go. 21.5 points, 8 rebounds. He should be able to win that battle against Quincy Guerrier, who has been wildly inconsistent this season. Guerrier, 7.5 points per game. And Oregon is not the greatest three-point shooting team in the world. They should see a rise from the current 26% that they are shooting from distance, shooting 61% at the free throw line. Once again, are they a great free throw shooting team? No. Are they better than this? Yes. And you've got Will Richardson, who just needs to be able to lock it down. And he's shown that in his career he's able to. Right now, 10 points, 4.3 boards, 4 assists per contest, but 4.5 steals per game. Last season, 2.1 steals, while he had 14 points, 3.5 assists, and shot nearly 40% from 3. I do think that his play is going to improve. Now, UConn, very good in terms of on-ball defending, and a team that they actually play a little bit more up-tempo. You've got guys like Tristan Newton, who are able to give you 10 points per contest, along with Naheem Aline, Joey Calcaterra, who comes in from San Diego, has been solid. And then you just have the guy that really doesn't score a lot, but does the little things for the team, and Hassan Diarra, giving you 4.5 points, 4.5 assists, 3 rebounds. He's able to give you a steal, comes in from Texas A&M. So I do think that all in all, UConn is going to be able to win out. I think that this is going to be a defensive grind-em-out game. I do think that this is going to be a little bit of an ugly game, and I think that Oregon, with Dante doing such a good job down low against Sanogo, is going to be able to make this team be able to stay in this game. Oregon also playing at a little bit of a slower tempo, so semi-total at a 133.5. I'm going to be diving under, and with Oregon, I set them as a 1.5-point underdog, so I'm going to be willing to take the points. 809, 810 on the betting board. It is Alabama, and they're going to be playing against Michigan State once again out there from lovely Portland, Oregon. And with Alabama, they are the favorite of anywhere between 3.5 and 4 points, seeing a straight 3 out there as well. Total on this game, it is between 145 and 145.5. And with Alabama, I was willing to set them as a 5-point favorite. Michigan State, I feel like, is starting to get a little bit overvalued. They had a very nice start to the season, but I still take a look at this Michigan State team, and I've got a few question marks with them. It feels like they've been getting a tad bit lucky in terms of the shots that they have been able to get to fall, and I still don't know who that real go-to guy is for this team. Ty Walker has been able to do a solid job being able to dole out the ball north of 5 assists per game, and A.J. Hogard especially. He's been able to give the team well over 6 assists per game himself, but when it comes to this Alabama team, you've got a well-oiled machine that is finally playing defense. Last season, there was not a lick of it to be found, but having Damari Burnett, after he was out due to injury, seems to have helped out this defense. He himself on offense has been able to register right in the neighborhood about 9.5 points per game, and with the turnovers, you have seen about 17 per game out of Alabama as well, but you're getting good production down low, about 10.5 rebounds per game out of one of their star freshmen, only about 7 points out of Noah Clowney, but he's been able to do a great job on that front. You've also had north of 20 points per game out of Brandon Miller. He's 6'9". He's shooting over 50% from 3-point range. Kid from Antioch / Nashville, Tennessee. Mark Sears, who comes in from Ohio, he's been able to do an amazing job doling out the ball. 3.5 assists, 5.5 boards, 15 points. He's shooting north of 40% from 3. And for Michigan State, I do think that they're going to be thrown for a little bit of a loop by this just up-tempo style. Michigan State shooting about 37% from 3. And I do think that that is pretty sustainable. Ty Walker, I mentioned before, along with McCall, combining for about 25.5 points. Hall is able to give you 5.5 rebounds per game. They're both shooting between 35 and 36% from 3-point range. I want to see what Jaden Akins does moving forward. He was banged up throughout the offseason due to an injury. He's been able to give the team a combined 16 points, 12 rebounds in the last 2 games. I think that he could be able to make a nice leap. And Joey Hauser, 6 boards, 14 points per game. But with Michigan State, maybe it's just me being biased based on just not seeing one guy putting up massive numbers, but I want to see a little bit more from them, and I do think that Alabama going to be able to speed them up, get them a little bit out of whack, and for Alabama, their defense has been much, much better this season. I do think that there are going to be points scored in this game. I did set my total as a result at a 149 looking over, and willing to lay up to 4.5 with Alabama, set them as a 5-point favorite, so looking at Alabama and the over, 8-11, 8-12 on the betting board. It is Duke. They're going to be taking on Oregon State. Oregon State is an underdog of between 21 and 21.5 points, and total on this game is anywhere between 139.5 and 140.5, and with Duke, I did set them as a 23-point favorite. Coming into the season, among D1 programs that were at the Power Conference level, my worst Power Conference team was Oregon State. Louisville is really charging hard on their heels, but with Oregon State, you really don't have a lot. Warbathal Atiche decided to go pro. You lose Christian Wright, who was supposed to be a main starting guard for this team. So Jordan Porpa, as a freshman, has had to run the point for this team, and he's been able to do a halfway decent job. 15.5 points, 4 assists per contest. But if you look at Oregon State, they played against a non-D1 team. They played against Tulsa. They lose on their home floor to Portland State. This is not a good team. Glenn Taylor Jr., 16 points, 2.5 assists. But Oregon State, 15 turnovers per game, shooting 25.5% from 3-point range. And now they have to go up against a Duke team that has them completely outgunned down low. Dmitry Rooney just not going to be able to match up with Kyle Filipowski. He's averaging a double-double, 15.5 points, 10.5 boards. He's able to shoot in the mid-30s from three. We haven't seen a lot out of Derek Lively, but he's another highly touted guy that I think that he's really going to be able to star once he gets more minutes, was dealing with a little bit of an injury. And you also had Derek Whitehead on the fold for the first few games of the season. He's starting to ease his way back, but even in the interim, you've got Jacob Granderson, who last season shot 40% from three with 10 points per contest at Illinois as a good sharpshooter. You've had Jeremy Roach be able to shoot nearly 40% from three, 3.5 assists for a Duke team that they really don't turn the ball over all like a lot. They've been able to do an amazing job controlling the glass. Oregon State just does not have a lot of size in general. Total mismatch, in my opinion. I did set this Duke team as a result as a 23-point favorite, despite the fact that it is in the great state of Oregon. I'm going to be willing to lay it. Set my total at a 135. This is a Duke bunch that looks like they're going to be one of the most efficient defenses in all of college basketball. They're really starting to hang their hat on that side of things. I do like what the new coaching regime is doing there. So as a result, going to be taking a look at this little under, and I'm willing to lay it with Duke. 813, 814 on the betting board. It is Xavier and the X-Men take on Florida. This is out there in Portland, and with Florida, they're a 1-1.5-point underdog. Total on this game is 150.5 across the board, and I did set my total at 147. Both of these teams, they play rather fast. They're both in the top 125 in terms of possessions per game, but neither of these teams are necessarily playing at any sort of a breakneck pace. So I am going to be willing to go under because you do have a big man for Florida in Colin Castleton, who last season had multiple blocks per contest and has been able to do a very solid job for this team as he's registering 25 points, 8.5 boards last season. And 16 points, 9 rebounds. I do think that the points are going to be regressing a little bit, but the question that I've got with Florida is sort of the backcourt. Kyle Lofton has done a nice job doling out offense, 10 points, 4 assists, less than a turnover per contest. And for Florida, only about 11.5 turnovers per game, but you need to be able to get some good production out of someone like a Trey Bonham. He comes in from VMI. He's only been able to register 3.5 points per contest. Was expecting a little bit more out of him. Now, Will Richard, after he was a freshman at Belmont last season, had 12 points per contest. He's now shooting 46% from 3 after he shot 33 last season, 14 points per game. For him, he's been able to do a very solid job, but you've also got on the flip side for Xavier, a guy in Sule Boom, who's been able to give you 14 points, 3.8 rebounds, 3.8 assists, and shooting over 50% from 3. Xavier as a whole, shooting 44.5% from 3. That is going to see a little bit of regression, but with the Xavier team, lots of weapons in the backcourt, including Swiss Army Knife Kobe Jones, 13.5 points, 5 boards, 6.5 assists, 2 steals, 1.7 blocks per game. And a partridge in a pear tree. He is absolutely amazing. And then you throw in there Jack Nunge and Zach Fremantle. These guys are combining for about 32.5 points per contest, 14 boards. Both of these guys are capable of shooting threes. Both of these guys give you a block and a half per game. That is going to be really hard for Florida to match up with. Castleton can probably take down one of them by himself, but I mean, with C.J. Felder coming off the bench, not getting a whole heck of a lot out of someone like Jason Jibodeau, that is going to be an issue for Florida. I think that the two versatile big men of Xavier are going to be the difference. I think that that's going to lead to things being a little bit slower as a result as well. I did set my total at a 147. I'm looking under, and with Xavier, I'm willing to lay up to 3 points with them. 8-15, 8-16 on the betting board. It is Purdue, and they are going to be taking on West Virginia. West Virginia out in Portland find themselves anywhere between a pick'em to a 1-point underdog, seeing them now as a 1-point favorite at Circa after they open up more around a 2-point underdog. And your total on this game, it is 136.5 to 138, and I did set my total at 135. West Virginia doing a great job of pushing the action, being able to generate a bunch of turnovers, and I think that that is going to be affecting a Purdue team that overall they've been relatively efficient on offense to begin the season, but they lose so many of those key pieces from the backcourt last season, like Jaden Ivey, like Sasha Stefanovic, and was able to keep things up and running. Only about 10.5 turnovers a game for Purdue this season, but if you take a look at Purdue's schedule to start the season, been a relative joke. They played against Marquette, that's a good win, but Ossipee and UW-Milwaukee, not necessarily much competition there, and Zach Edey, giant of the earth, has been amazing down low, 20.5 points, 13.5 boards, 3.3 blocks per contest, but Purdue also shooting 28.5% from 3. That'll go upward, but with the freshman that you bring in a guy in Braden Smith who's been able to give the team right around 10.5 points per contest and 2.5 assists. Fletcher Lawyer, he's been able to chip in there 10 points as well. That has been solid. But David Jenkins, he shoots a few threes for his career. He's been able to be about a 37 to 38% 3-point shooter, but that's about it. He's a one-trick pony, and with West Virginia, you've just got more well-rounded players in general. You bring in Trey Mitchell 2 seasons ago, and UMass at 18.7 boards was able to knock down over 40% of his threes. Eric Stevenson has been able to deliver about 12 points per game. Last season shot 98% at the free throw line. He is absolutely tremendous with that regard. Joe Toussaint does a good job of really holding the offense together as a little bit of a glue guy. He's able to give you a few assists. He's able to give you a few rebounds. Just anything that you need, he's got you. And with West Virginia, currently, they are getting about 8 steals per contest, and a big reason why. A little bit of an under-the-radar guy in Kadrian Johnson. Came in as a junior college transfer a few seasons ago. He's been able to do a nice job. 6.5 points, 3.5 assists, 2 steals. Not a lot of scoring, but a whole heck of a lot of production. And Emmett Matthews being able to do a solid job at 6'7", bearing about 41% of his threes. X factor for a West Virginia team that doesn't really turn the ball over a lot. I've got West Virginia as a very slight favorite. They don't have Zach Edey, but they've got the more well-rounded team. So I'm looking at West Virginia as a pick-up slash a money line underdog. Set my total at 135. So looking at this total under as well. 817, 818 on the betting board. It is Gonzaga playing against Portland State. Portland State between a 27 and a 27.5 point underdog. John's game is 161.5. Game is being played in the city of Portland, but that said, Gonzaga is going to have more fans in this game, but could only set the line at 25.5. I think we went a little bit too far with Gonzaga. Yeah, love seeing that game that they had up against Kentucky a few days ago as Drew Timmy has been able to do a very solid job as a scoring big man. Lets up a little bit of something on defense, though. Always a little bit of a trepidation that I've had with them. And for this Gonzaga team, you've got Julian Strother, who's been incredible. 15.5 points, 8.5 boards. He is bearing 50% of his threes. As of right now, Gonzaga as a whole, they've been able to do a great job from the outside, shooting 36% from three, but 17.5 turnovers per game. A little bit of that is due to the fact that you play against Kentucky and you play against Texas. You know what? That's going to heighten things a little bit. But for Portland State, I do think that they hold in thin this number because they've got a lot of well-rounded guys, and they themselves generate right around 8 steals per game. They don't turn the ball over a whole heck of a lot, and they've got someone that is able to take care of the ball in Cameron Parker, who's been in college for 100 million billion years. He had 24 assists in a game when I was at Sacred Heart a few seasons ago. That was a D1 NCAA record. He's averaging 14 points, 5.5 assists to 2 turnovers per game. He's also able to shoot in the high 30s from 3-point range. He's gotten 17.5 points per game out of Jatrell Satterfield, who shot 43.5% from 3-point range while he was at UTEP last season. This is a Portland State team that's dealing with a lot of transfers, but this is a coaching staff that has also dealt with being in the junior college level where there's nothing but turnover year in and year out, so they are used to it. They could use Trey Wood perhaps getting back out there on the floor. He played just one game thus far for the team, 10 points, 6 rebounds. They're expecting a little bit out of him down low because they don't necessarily have a lot of size. You're relying upon guys like Isaiah Johnson, Hunter Curtis, and company to be able to help out there, but that's it for Portland State. Even though they do lose that battle down low, they do have a guy, Hunter Woods, who comes in from Elon, shooting 43.5% for 3, 12 points, right around 7.5 boards, as a 6'6", a little bit of a bowling ball player. I think that is going to be able to keep them in it with Gonzaga. You've got such good backcourt pieces, someone like an Efton Reed who's able to pop threes, but with Gonzaga, I do question the camaraderie of this team and just being able to have that offensive chemistry and flow with the way that they've been turning the ball over. So, willing to take the points. Did set my total at 163.5. This is a Portland State team that is not going to turn down for anyone in terms of tempo. They are a team that is going to be letting up quite a few points, and with Gonzaga, you know that they're able to put the biscuit in the basket as well. So, going to be taking a look at the over, and I am willing to take 27-27.5 with Portland State. These next two games are off the board. 819, 820 on the betting board. Wooden Legacy Tournament, Fresno State and Vanderbilt. I made my number, Vanderbilt being a 4-point favorite, and I did set my total at a 124, so 123.5 or less. Looking at the over, 124.5 or higher. Going to be taking a look at the under when it comes to Vanderbilt. Liked what I saw from them yesterday. They didn't get the outright win, but you know what? Going up against that St. Mary's team, that was actually not a very easy task at all. And for Vanderbilt, you've got someone in Miles Stute who's been able to give you double figures. He's got a little bit of versatility and shoots right around 40% from 3-point range as a 6'7" stretch player. For Vanderbilt, depth has not necessarily been great for them, as you were expecting Lee Dort to be able to give the same production. He's currently out of the fold. Emmanuel Ansung, not terrific, but Liam Robbins, he's able to give you multiple blocks per game, and he was able to do a very solid job yesterday in a reserve role for this team. You really need to have Jordan Wright going last season. He was Mr. Wright, 12.5 points, shot 35% from three going into yesterday. Was shooting just 30% from distance with 3 turnovers per game, but he's been able to turn things up as well. And then for Fresno State, this backcourt is just a little bit of a disaster right now. Jamero Baker was a double-figure scorer a few seasons ago while he was at Arizona. He's just not been able to step up. Isaiah Moore is trying to fill the shoes of a man that did just such great work a season ago in Orlando Robinson. Robinson was averaging 19.7 boards as a 7-footer, was able to let it fly from 3. And for Moore, he has been able to give you about 8 rebounds per game. He's chipping in there 14 points per game, but just not the same for this team. And when it comes to having someone like an Anthony Holland in the backcourt giving you about 6 boards, 9 points per game, that being one of the main things that you're able to rely upon. That's not too terrific. Fresno State as a whole, they're shooting below 27% from three. They're turning the ball over north of 13 times per game, despite being in the bottom 25 in terms of possessions per game. That's not great. You're going to see a lot of drive possessions for Fresno State. They do a good job of beating up in your grill on defense, though. Did set my total at 124, 123 and a half or less, looking over 124 and a half or higher to the under, but with Vanderbilt, won't lay up to 3.5 with them, 4.5 or more, going to be willing to take the points with Fresno State, 821, 822. Last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the extra game, not games, game, Washington and St. Mary's. I set St. Mary's as a 9-point favorite, won't lay up to 8.5 with them. Pretty much I need 9.5 or more to take a shot on Washington, with my total being 124 and a half. Washington is finally playing that super duper slow style that they've been looking to for so long with this team. And for Washington, they do have some ideal size. I do like the way that this roster has been put together, as Frank Kepanong has come in from the Pac-12. He's been able to give this team 7+ rebounds per game with Mike Hopkins. He always likes to be able to play a little bit more of a defense that is going to be getting takeaways. And they haven't necessarily done the most supreme job of that thus far this season, but they do have a guy in the backcourt that has been able to emerge as just that go-to scorer for this team in Keenan Menifield. Menifield has been able to pump in there about 13 or so points per contest. I also do like the game of Cole Bajema, 6'7", a little bit of a combo player that began his career at Michigan. He's been able to shoot in the mid-30s from three-point range, giving the team 8.5 points, 6 rebounds per game. But with St. Mary's, they just are going to be too much for them, because this is a St. Mary's team that they've got Kyle Bowen, who had 6'8", shooting over 40% from three. And really, St. Mary's as a whole entered into yesterday shooting darn near 45% from three-point range. They are a brick wall on defense. They play very slowly, but they get every rebound because Mitchell Saxon is able to give you 13.5 points, nearly 10 rebounds per game. Bowen is able to give you 7.5 rebounds per game. Alex Dusas at 6'7", 14 points, burying over 50% of his threes. You've got a St. Mary's bunch that also has a nice facilitator in Logan Johnson. He's been able to do a nice job, giving the team 11 points, about 6 boards, 3.5 assists. The team does a nice job of being able to generate steals, and that's something that Washington is looking to do a little bit more of. But St. Mary's, they do such a good job of taking care of the ball. As a result, St. Mary's is a 9-point favorite. One lay up to 8.5 with them, 9.5 or more, taking the points with Washington. And somebody told 124.5, 124 or less, looking over 125 or higher to the under. Now we hit our extra game.
So we go into the bonus.
306, 645, 306, 646. It is New Orleans. They're going to be playing against IUPUI. Eewee peewee is an 11-point underdog with your total aim between 138 and 138.5. I don't think IUPUI is going to duplicate what they did yesterday, where they came out and they made 6 out of their first 7 shots. This is a New Orleans bunch that typically puts a lot of points up on the board, but they had a little bit of a tough time against the Citadel. Now, the one fear that you have with an under on IUPUI is not them, but it's actually their defense. Their defense is absolutely putrid, and we saw them give up 86 points to a Denver team that really doesn't have a lot of full-on offense. But I'm looking at this total under. I set my total at 132. I do think that you're going to see negative regression after Jalen Counter was hitting darn near every shot yesterday. He, for IUPUI, has been able to give this team 12.5 points per contest. Down low, Chris Osten has actually been able to step up. He's now averaging about 8 points, 7.5 rebounds, had a double-double yesterday, so give a little bit of credit where credit is due. But for New Orleans, this team is a collective. They're shooting about 36-37% from three-point range, but here's the problem with them. They came into yesterday averaging 23.3 turnovers per game. They were able to do a little bit better against the Citadel, but I mean, 15 turnovers, that's still not too terrific. You do have someone like a Simeon Kirkland, who has been able to give the team 8.5 rebounds per game. Tyson Jackson is down low by a season, 9 points, 4 boards. He's been able to give the team right around about 2 rebounds, so leaves a little bit of something to be desired as a 6'9" player that doesn't shoot threes. But that said, with New Orleans, you do have one guy that's able to go out there, get you a bucket. Jordan Johnson last season at Denver was averaging 11 points per contest. He's come in here. He's been able to shoot north of 40% from three-point range. He's able to give you about 15 or so points per game, doling out a few assists as well. He should be a big difference maker. And with New Orleans, just a little bit of better production off the bench for this team. Daniel Sackey is able to give you multiple assists. Not much of a scorer, but is able to get guys like a Marquez Cooper, who I do think is going to be able to pick it up after he came in from the non-D1 level and was relatively productive at the non-D1 level online. So I'm willing to lay the points with New Orleans. Set them as an 18-point favorite. This is a true home game for them out there in Louisiana, and IUPUI just looks PU, so willing to lay the points and looking at this little under, and that will wrap things up for the Thanksgiving Day edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. If you need like material from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at @unit_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, they mean does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Big thanks to Justin Perry of Shot Quality Best for joining me in the last segment. I'll be coming at you guys every single day on this podcast. That means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.